If you believe assault is an act, not an adjective, your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. What do you believe? Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener. Because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
Welcome, my friends. Welcome to another episode of 2A Radio. It's May 14th, 2009. Again, welcome to the show. Thank you for spending part of your morning with me. I have come to a revelation, and after long and hard thinking, doing a little bit of research, I have really, really come to believe this one truism. I believe it to be true, and it just came to me. The Obama administration sucks. That's my revelation. They suck. Obama said during a campaign speech, a couple of different campaign speeches, before he was president-elect, that he was not going to take our guns. Didn't want them. Didn't want our handguns, our shotguns, our rifles. Didn't want them. So what he's done is now he's saying he's not going to take them. Didn't say I don't want them. He says I'm not going to take them, which he's not. What he's going to try to do is get the people on Capitol Hill to take them. And if not through direct vote, which doesn't have a whole bunch of chance of passing at this point in time, but through this CIFTA treaty, this North American Arms Treaty, this is something that it was a Clinton-era misconception of a treaty. The House passed it. The Senate did not. And it's basically been dead and buried for about 11 years or so now. Obama really wants them to grab this treaty and pass it. What would this mean? Well, part of the treaty, it's kind of sticky, because the treaty would be one of these deals where you can't really have a treaty to infringe on American rights. But there's a lot of things that are our rights that are not necessarily spelled out in the Constitution, or things that we've been doing that are not necessarily rights, that are related to a right, such as reloading. This treaty would ban reloading because we would otherwise be an unlicensed manufacturer. Okay. It would also cause there to have to be national registration of firearms. And, of course, banning certain types of firearms. So Obama's saying, I'm not going to take these things. Well, he's going to try to get the Senate to take them through a treaty. So go to 2aradio.com. Click on the link that says Fight Obama's Weapons Ban Treaty. Copy the letter. Click on the link to go to your senator. Send them to three people. Send them to Richard Reid, who is the Senate Majority Leader, and the two senators that represent the state in which you reside. And paste the letter off of those links, and then sign your name on it. Send those off and get everybody you know to do the same thing. Copy and paste it generically with a copy of the link off of my site onto an email and send it out to everybody in your email list, everybody in your address book on your email. Do that to help fight this. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk a little bit about Obama's dog and pony show on guns in Mexico. And then talk a little bit more specifically about his lying of the guns and everything to do with the CIFTA treaty. So stick around through the break. We'll be back in a couple minutes.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
So here's what's been going on in Washington. We're just going to recap a little bit on this whole thing about American guns and Mexican crime. All right, here's what we got. We started off with the scumbag attorney general by the name of Eric Holder in D.C., part of the Obama administration. This jackass fired the opening shot, claiming that a renewed U.S. assault weapons ban was needed to fight Mexican cartel violence in Mexico. We then saw how actual interdiction results were not bearing this out. Okay. We saw what happened to the 90% of the Mexican crime guns that allegedly came from the U.S. And when faced with a penalty of perjury, when that was introduced into the mix, all of a sudden that 90% kind of faded away. And it changed to 90% of the traced confiscated guns, which is a play on words. It's truly around 17%. And most of that comes through the licensed DHS sales. I'm sorry, not DHS sales. The DCS sales, direct commercial sales, through the U.S. State Department. And corruption in Mexico. That's where the 17% are mainly coming from. Then we saw what happened when someone who knows how to count actually crunched the numbers. We can thank that quite a bit to Fox News. We talked about U.S. government weapons exports, these DCS sales. We saw the 90% lie and what happened when it was exposed. But yet it was also repeated in a DHS report to law enforcement, even after it was exposed. Then we took a little warehouse tour where we could see for ourselves the disconnect between what's reported and what's actually stored. I read this story to you on this, I guess it's a huge warehouse with guns in it just outside of Mexico City. So I actually reported on those guns. And now, thanks to Bill Controy of Narcosphere, we learned the following. He did a little bit more research. Experts suggest that the Mexican weapons bust press conference may have been a staged event. One former ATF agent, who asked that his name not be divulged, suggested one possibility. And here is his quote. "This is all a dog and pony show." The former agent said, "It's not out of the realm of possibility that the Mexican government staged the gun bust, or at least hyped the press conference, using previously seized weapons in order to bolster its chance of securing additional aid from the U.S. government to help continue its escalation of the drug war." The former agent adds that he is suspicious of all coincidences surrounding the weapon seizures, including the fact that the guns were found by accident during a routine patrol. At least one of the guns was a replica, and one of the gun platforms was nothing more than an aluminum prop. "It's happened before," the former agent said. "You bring in some dope or guns from the police warehouse's props, it's a big game. A big game. One where the stakes cannot be higher, and one where our opponents are professional hustlers. No wonder they want to cheat us out of our guns." I've got to tell you, I am absolutely sickened that government agents, government entities, go to this stage to hustle, lie, cheat, and steal to get what they want at our expense when we have done nothing wrong. Nothing at all. The government of Mexico has, from its inception, been corrupt. The government of the United States has, from just post-inception, been corrupt. Now, in Mexico, it's much more flagrant. You can literally walk up to a Mexican official, grease his palm with some cash and tequila, and bail out with whatever it is you wanted to accomplish. In the U.S., it's more complicated. You have to form an organization. And then within that organization, you have to get tax-exempt status. And then from that tax-exempt status, then you can give money to these crooked, dirty, filthy, disgusting politicians who will take your money and vote the way that you wanted to vote, have them vote, because you bought their vote. That's the way it works in this country. So it's a much more high-end, it's a higher-end, nicer, upscale sort of corruption that goes on in this country. And it's one of those deals where if this were found to happen outside of the provisions that the U.S. government put in for this corruption to go on, if it was a little bit lower end, that's when they start to prosecute. You got to jump through the hoops. You got to jump through legal hurdles in order to pay someone off and be corrupt in this country. It still gets done. I mean, they go through the motions. In Mexico, it's just a lot easier. Now, Mexico wants some money from the U.S. government. We're broke. We're bankrupt. The U.S. government is bankrupt. They have been bankrupt for decades. When under the Reagan administration, I don't blame Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan quite amply was very, very vocal about the Democratic Congress that he had to deal with and how they kept spending and spending and spending. And he tried to get a line item veto. Didn't work. Came through, I think, in Bush 1, and then the Supreme Court said, nah, you can't do that. So it was rewritten, came through in Clinton. Supreme Court says, nah, it's not written right, you can't do that. Line item veto should be in. I like the idea. Anyhow, with that being said, we now have a bankrupt American system. However, all they got to do is call up their buds over at the Federal Reserve and say, hey, can you print us up a little bit more cash down there? Just send it over. We're going to do a couple. We'll sign a promissory note. You know, it's all good. You guys are going to get richer and richer. It's all good. And then the Mexicans want us to ship a boatload of this cash with probably some more guns through the DCS sales down to Mexico. So if the Obama administration is telling them, look, you carry on with this lie. And you help us out because we want to get the guns, and we're going to try to use this whole fallacy and lie of the gun violence in Mexico having something to do with straw purchase guns in America. We know it's a bunch of bull. We know it's lies. But if you help us out, we're going to give you some marching orders, and we'll send you some more money that we don't actually have. So what does the Mexican government say? Oh, sí. We will absolutely screw the pooch on this one for you. We will do what we can to make it look bad for the Americans to get the money. Now, what do you think is going to happen with that money? It's going to get spread out throughout all the guys that helped out. It's not going to go into the Mexican government. Hardly a pittance will go into the fighting the drug war, which coincidentally has been escalated by the Mexican government. So, we have a bunch of druggies here in this country. So the drug cartel in Mexico wants to feverishly feed these druggies. And as they're feeding these druggies, the Mexican government's going in and say, whoa, hold on, we want you to stop doing that. So then a war breaks out, and then the U.S. government says, hey, it's the fault of the American gun owner, because American gun owners are going in, buying guns at gun shows and at licensed gun dealers, and smuggling them across the Mexican border to Mexican nationals who are giving them to the drug cartel, who are fighting the Mexican government, who are fighting the drug cartel because the drug cartel is sending drugs over to druggies in America. So it's the fault of the American gun owner. What a wicked web we weave. What a bunch of lies, and what a bunch of idiots. They are totally confused.
You're totally confused again, aren't you?
That's essentially the position of the Obama administration. We're totally confusing you guys. To the point, I wonder if they even believe their own lies. It's like a Joseph Goebbels sort of thing. Joseph Goebbels was the, I guess, press agent for Adolf Hitler. And he once said something along the lines of, and I'm paraphrasing, no matter how big and bold a lie is, how unbelievable it may be, if you tell it enough times, people will begin to believe it. And that was the propaganda muscle of Adolf Hitler. Joseph Goebbels said that. And you know something? It's unfortunate he actually said those words, because it would have taken a smarter person to unravel what he was doing. Because we've been victims of that many times over from people who are within our own government. This government that's broken. The government that's corrupt. The government that lies, cheats, and steals to do what they want to do, to accomplish what they want. The government that has gone so far as to socialize major portions of the U.S. economy and vehicles and banking and mortgages. They have subsidized all of these. So now they say you, the taxpayers, own part of this. That's a lie. Because the taxpayers have no say. It's not like we're going to be able to go to the corporate board of directors meeting or something, or the annual shareholders meeting. No, the U.S. government's going to give them direction, which means the government owns a good portion and controls a good portion of the banking industry and the mortgage industry. Thank you very much for the corruption. These are the same people that are telling you, we don't want your guns, or we're not going to take your guns. Yet, they're doing all this malicious stuff on the outskirts, on the fringes, to do exactly that. Do not be fooled again. This is Bill Carnes on 2A Radio. Stick around through the break.
Irresponsible people have no business owning a gun or listening to this show. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes. 1-800-313-9443.
Okay, so this mangy dog, sorry excuse for a presidential administration, are now, they're bitterly clinging to Obama's fake gun numbers. Here's a little story for you. American gun owners en masse are casting their ballots, as it were, on how much they believe Barack Obama's campaign trail promised to not take away your guns. They're driving the price of ammo through the roof, swarming gun shows, and leaving the pallets and floors of the ammo supplier booths as naked as a wheat field after a locust swarm passes through. A guy by the name of Glenn Parshall at Bargain Pawn in North Las Vegas, Nevada, recently put up a single round of 380 ACP, a rather unimpressive round. He put that single round up for sale on Auction Arms and sold it for $17 to another gun dealer back east. It was pretty much a joke, and Glenn even said that he sent the round in a little red velvet jewelry case. The buyer wanted a receipt so he could frame and hang it on the wall to show his customers how much stuff costs these days. Of course, handgun ammo is not $17 a round, at least not just yet, but it's a joke with a point. The gun grabbers and the hoopla phobes, now nearing a veto-proof majority in the Senate, with the defection of Arlen the Magic Bullet Specter and the Democrats, and the likely success of the Democratic lawyers in the recounting until it works sort of affair in Minnesota to seat professional comedian Al Franken as a Democrat, don't have to take away our guns. If they can sign some kind of international treaty, like this CIFTA deal, they'd be bypassing and overruling certain U.S. statutes, and it would ban ammunition reloading as manufacturing without a license, and then drive the price of both firearms and ammunition through the roof by requiring every bullet and its matching brass casing to bear some sort of, quote, matching but unique identifying numbers, supposedly for the use of police in tracking weapons used in crimes. Okay, guys. Let's address this. Let's pause for just a moment and address this. When bad guys steal cars, oftentimes, the ones that know what they're doing will steal a license plate off another car, The real smart ones will steal a license plate off another car that matches the car that they're going to steal, and they swap the plates. Therefore, when the car that's stolen gets reported stolen, the plates get put into the police database. The person who owns the car and is driving the car that had the plate swapped out oftentimes have no idea because they don't look at their license plates on a daily basis. Hence was a case that I had when I was Las Vegas Metro. Driving around, pull up a couple of plates here and there. Here comes one, says it's a stolen car. So we pull the stolen car over. Everything matches. We pull them over, do a felony car stop on a family, a Mexican family, a lady and her couple of kids, and another lady and her couple of kids, all in Toyota Tercel or something. Well, as it turns out, you look at the VIN, the vehicle identification number, the serial number of the car, and it's appropriate. What happened was somebody stole a car like this one and swapped the plates. So they ended up being greeted by a bunch of cops with guns pointed out, shouting commands in English, when, of course, they spoke Spanish, so it didn't work out so well. Now, we have a stolen car with stolen plates. The stolen plates are in, and that's not going to be in the felony database. It's going to be just stolen plates. Okay, so now they're going to be rolling up unprepared. All this is being said, that criminals know how to defeat this sort of thing. Now, you've got these guys up in the state of Washington that started this technology. They developed the technology for microstamping. And they tried to, I'm sorry, not microstamping, but serializing ammunition and the casings that they come in. They tried to sell this technology to all the major U.S. manufacturers of ammunition. Not a one of them had any interest whatsoever in this. Not a one. So now what they've done is they've aligned themselves with anti-gun groups and said this technology exists and here's something that you could use as a biting tool, as a discussion piece for anti-crime measures to try and push this through at state levels. So now they're trying to get to the point where their technology could exist because either the federal government or different state governments would require that ammunition be serialized. Now, I guess, in my opinion, the government and the government entities should lead by example. They should start with serialized ammunition. How about that? How about driving your own price of ammunition up, guys? Those of you in state police or county police or any federal police, if the people above you really want to have serialized ammunition, they ought to force you cops and you special agents on the street to carry serialized ammunition. What do you think about that? Huh? Then you'd know who shot who. Oh, yeah, bad guy. A whole bunch of people shot at this guy. We don't know which guns they came from. Yeah, well, now you would know. So why don't we start with you guys? Why don't we burden the government with the excess expense of that? Part of the reason why we don't is because they're just going to pass that cost along to us. Lovely, isn't it? More about this and this insanity, absolute insanity, coming out of the Obama administration. When we return, this is Bill Carnes with 2A Radio.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Rule 1, assume it's loaded. Rule 2, don't point it at anything you're not willing to destroy. Rule 3, listen to the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. 1-800-313-9443. Radio with Bill Carnes, 1-800-313-9443.
All right, it's time to get up and get heard. This CIFTA treaty that President Obama, this Clinton-era just absolute mess of a treaty that the Senate has refused to pass, he's pushing. What would happen if that got pushed? Well, according to the treaty, and there's a bunch of Latin American countries that have signed on to this treaty. Now, let's give you a little bit of a background on this. Latin American countries have signed on to this treaty. Since this treaty was signed, I think it was 34 out of 37 countries at this conference back during the Clinton administration. They put this treaty together, 34 out of 37 have signed it. You know what's gone on in the vast majority of these countries when it comes to guns? Crime has gone up. Gun crime has gone up because all they've done is deny the rights of guns and ammunition to honest, law-abiding citizens by making it illegal for them to have guns and ammo. So crime has gone up. Do you want more violent crime in America? If you want to have more violent crime in America, more violent crime that you can do nothing about, then the CIFTA treaty's for you. I am not a big fan of that. Absolutely not. I will stand by the cloak with my semi-automatic dagger, the cloak of the U.S. Constitution, and the Supreme Court decisions that say I have a right to keep and bear arms. And if anyone passes any form of treaty whatsoever that says any of the stuff I've already got or already participate in, be it the guns that I buy, the ammunition that I shoot, or the ammunition that I hand load at my home, if any of that becomes illegal, then guess what? I, Bill Carnes, am going to be a criminal because I will not submit. I have always been a person of principles. Always. And if I believe something is right over something that is wrong, and I have got all the good stuff to back up the difference between right and wrong, I will not go down the path of wrong simply because the other sheep are doing said walk of shame. I will not do that. In this CIFTA treaty, in Article 4 of this treaty, it would ban reloading. Countries committing to this treaty would be adopting necessary legislative and other measures to criminalize illicit manufacturing and trafficking in ammunition and firearms. Remember that illicit manufacturing includes reloading and modifying or assembly of a firearm in any way. So, if you have a firing pin that breaks in a gun, you can't change it out because that is now illicit manufacturing. So, what's this going to do to the people who are gunsmiths or people who just kind of tinker around with their own gun? I'm not a licensed gunsmith, but I tell you what, pretty much every gun I own, I can tear apart, replace parts, and put it back together. I can respring about any spring on any gun that I own. All right, it ain't that tough. I've been doing it long enough. I know how to do it. This treaty would essentially throw in a question of legality whether or not I can do that. In Article 6 of this treaty, micro-stamping. That's right, micro-stamping. A technology that as of right now today doesn't exist in any firearms in this country. Where you'd have to make it to where when you fire around, a serial number is applied to the case of the gun that came out of. Of course, the round itself and the casing also have their own serial number, so you'd have a pair of serial numbers. One of the round of ammunition, who made it, where it came from, who it got sold to, because you'd have to fill out all the paperwork for that, and it's going to have the serial number of the weapon that fired it. Now, how is that going to solve any crimes at all? Let me give you just a little bit of information. People that commit crimes with guns, that own guns legally, they snap. Somebody is an otherwise law-abiding gun owner, legal gun owner, and they snap. And they end up grabbing a gun and committing a crime with it. Almost without fail. They snapped. So it's not this whole idea of, okay, well, you know, I'm going to go be a criminal. I'm going to use a gun to be a criminal. It's a snapping affair where someone goes out and without a tremendous amount of thought or sense of well-being or welfare for themselves or anyone else around them, they go a little bit nuts. And they are found easily because they are not career criminals. It's like an amateur criminal. Somebody that's otherwise a law-abiding citizen that has some event in their life. Maybe it's a, you know, something to do with a job or a spouse or former spouse or something to do with finances or other family matters or career, whatever it is. They snap. And they grab a gun and they're just going to go nutty. All right? Those people are inevitably always found out. Like right then and there. Oftentimes because they get shot at the scene of the crime or after a chase afterwards. People who are career criminals that do this for a job, that's the people that snap are essentially amateur criminals. They don't do it for a living. They don't do it on a regular basis. Right? They're amateurs. The people who are professional criminals get around that. They don't buy guns from legitimate means, legitimate sources. And they could care less what's serialized or not because everything's going to be stolen. So this is what will happen. Someone buys some ammunition. It's got, let's say the ammunition has serial numbers on it. So they got to go through all the paperwork. You got to fill out the paperwork. You got to do your fingerprints. You got to do the background check before you can buy your limit of 50 rounds this month. Right? We're talking somewhere in the very, very distant future. Like, I don't know, maybe in July of this year. Where you've got to jump through all these hoops, right? You got to give them ID. You got to give them your "I'm authorized to purchase ammunition" card because you had to go through the class and pay all the fees, and then you can get 50 rounds a month, and you got to sign everything, go through all the hoops, right? After you've done that, someone you go make a couple other stops. Someone breaks into your car and steals that ammunition. All right, so you're like, man, somebody stole my ammo. Well, that ammo is then used in a gun that was stolen from somebody else in a crime. So the cops jump, oh, we've got these shell casings and these bullets. Oh, this is the person that owned the bullets, and this is the person that owned the guns. Owned the gun, rather. So then they go to the person who bought the ammo, and the guy says, well, yeah, it was smashed out of my car. I got the receipt for the new window and the insurance claim. You know, somebody stole it. Well, you know what? You didn't report it stolen, so you're going to do the time. I didn't do the crime. No, but you didn't report the ammunition stolen, which in itself is a statutory crime, and we're going to prosecute you on it. And you, sir, over here, or possibly, and you, ma'am, over here, you single working, single parent, adult, female, that keeps a gun for self-protection, keeps a couple around the house. Your gun was used in this crime. Well, I didn't know that. Well, you should have known it. You didn't report it stolen. Well, you know, my house was broken into a week ago. I'm still sorting out all the stuff that wasn't there. Well, you should have done it quicker because now you are going to do some time. So now two innocent people, a gun owner that had a gun stolen, doesn't know about it, somebody who bought ammunition that had to have it registered and signed out to them, they both are going to do time when the criminal walks free. Somebody's doing time. Is it the person that deserves to do time? No. That person's walking around stealing other guns and other ammo. Do you really think career criminals are going to be affected by this? No. You say you want to have common sense gun laws. It's not a gun law so much. It's be a common sense crime law. And they talked about it in New York. Let me repeat it for you. If you commit a crime and you are convicted, if you are convicted of committing a crime that would otherwise disallow you from owning or possessing firearms or ammunition after this conviction, and you commit said crime with a gun, not only should you have your rights to guns taken away, but you should be put on a database list, such as a sex offender, you'd be a firearms offender. Not anybody that commits a crime that now, you know, like forgery is a felony. You get convicted of a felony, forgery. You can't own a gun. That would not entitle you to be on this list. If you committed forgery with a gun somehow, if that were possible, you would then be on this list. Robbery from a person, right? battery with a deadly weapon. Let's say you take a baseball bat and beat the living hell out of somebody with it. They live. You end up doing some time. You come back. You can't own a gun. You're not on the list. But if you batter someone with a gun, maybe you shoot them or you beat them with the gun, whatever it is. If there's a gun involved in your hand and you're committing this crime, you get convicted of it. Then you would go on the list. Okay, you can't have a gun and you committed the offense that you're convicted of with a gun. You're going to go on this list. Okay, so it would be like a firearms offenders page. Because quite honestly, guys, some of you might be shaking your head. No, I don't like that idea. I don't like that idea. Here's the deal. I don't want those people having guns. You shouldn't want them having guns either. Because this is now a criminal element. Somebody, maybe they were honest once upon a time, but they committed a criminal act. They are now a criminal element. And they shouldn't have guns. And quite honestly, I don't want to bear their burden. If someone else commits a crime, I don't want to bear their burden because I am a gun owner. I have guns and ammunition. I shouldn't have to bear their burden. You shouldn't have to bear their burden. Nobody should have to bear their burden but them. They would be the criminals. They should bear all of the burden. If you have any comments on this, feel free to call the hotline at 800-313-9443 and repute my thoughts. Let me know what you think. The idea of having the earlier situation come up is one of these ideas where different anti-gunners have come up with this. Okay, if you don't report this stuff stolen, but you provided it, you basically provided a gun and you provided ammunition to somebody that they stole. You made it to a point where they could get to it. You should do time. Can you believe that? If you didn't have your guns locked up and inaccessible, and your ammunition locked up and inaccessible, then these people wouldn't have, the bad guys wouldn't have gotten the guns and ammunition, and they wouldn't have committed this heinous crime. And you should do the time. Here's my answer to that.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. May God have mercy on your soul.
That's what I have to say to the anti-gunners that would go so far as to say, if a bad guy is able to get your gun or your ammunition, you should be held liable for the crime that they commit. Now, let's put this into another perspective. If someone steals your car and does something illegal with it, you should be held partially responsible, right? Because you couldn't keep your vehicle secured from someone getting it. That's the same analogy. Also with these people that would otherwise want to sue gun manufacturers. Now with the Tyhart Amendment, they're not going to do that. Been upheld in court now. Matter of fact, Glock just got out of a lawsuit. Some guy took a Glock and shot up a Jewish seminary back in, I think it was 97. And they wanted to sue Glock. Glock wasn't responsible. The idiot with the gun was responsible. Now, he's the guy that should be getting put down. That's where everybody with guns who are there to protect themselves should have pulled their guns out and lit this guy up like the 4th of July and aerated him like a big block of Swiss cheese. Someone comes near me with ill intent with a gun, I flat guarantee there's going to be some lead poisoning in this guy's body by the end of this deal. I flat guarantee it. Not only have I trained myself physically, but also prepared myself and trained myself mentally for this sort of occurrence. I don't carry a gun because I'm paranoid. I'm carrying a gun because I want to live long and happy. I want my kids to grow up with their dad around. I want to do things in life. And I'm not going to have some crazed scumbag that's out just for themselves stop me from doing it. No. That's like somebody trying to pick a fight with Royce Gracie from mixed martial arts. Somebody just doesn't know. You know, I'm going to pick a fight with this guy. It doesn't look that tough. Not knowing that the guy's a multi-degree Brazilian jiu-jitsu and championship fighter in the octagon. No idea. They don't know what they're up for, right? They're ignorant. Same thing would be against someone such as myself or Dave Champion or any number of people that we shoot and train with. Somebody comes in as a bad guy, waving a gun or a knife around, threatening people's lives if they don't get what they want, threatening my life. I'm now imminently afraid of threat of life or serious bodily injury from this guy. What am I going to do? Shoot. I'm going to shoot the guy because that's what he's asking to get done. If bad guys aren't prepared to get shot, they shouldn't bring a potential fight to someone else. I know if I were ever to go a little wacko and pull my gun out in an offensive rather than defensive means, I know I run the risk of being shot and potentially being killed from those rounds. I know that. It's not something I'm going to do, and that's not the reason I don't do it. I don't do it because it's not the right thing to do. But the bad guys don't know this. The second that they flip and people start shooting bad guys for doing this kind of thing, it's going to really make the criminal enterprise less and less attractive as a career to move into. You think? Do you think if bad guys that commit crimes with guns and knives are getting shot up across the United States as soon as they pull this knife or gun, threatening people with fear of loss of life or serious bodily injury, and they start getting shot all across the country? Do you think that's going to curb the next generation of criminals? Probably. But you've got to carry a gun and be trained to carry a gun to defend yourself and not let them take the life or put the fear of death into you.
Gun control, loved by dictators since 1917. The two-way radio show with Bill Karnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
Folks, the state's gun rights is the next constitutional battlefield. The right to keep and bear arms is famously and specifically referred to in the Second Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. Alas, for advocates of the right, the language of the amendment gets tangled up in the regulating of militias and the interpretation of commas. Now, a multi-state movement is trying to find more robust constitutional support in another amendment which makes no mention of weaponry or guns or gun rights at all. The 10th Amendment declares, "The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people." It inspired the so-called Sagebrush Rebellion that swept through the West 3 decades ago, preventing the federal takeover of public lands pushed by the Carter administration, and propelling the self-proclaimed Sagebrush rebel Ronald Reagan to the presidency in 1980. Now the 10th Amendment is being invoked by pro-gun advocates to press for state rather than federal regulation of gun manufacturers. Montana has passed a law where local gun manufacturers, state gun manufacturers, are allowed to sidestep federal regulations as long as the weapons they make are sold within the territory of the state. It's a gun bill, but it's another way of demonstrating the sovereignty of the state of Montana. Here's a quote from the governor of Montana. "I like the big guns. I like the little guns. I like pistols. I like rifles. And I would like to buy a gun that's made in Montana." There you go. In Texas, which recently saw Governor Rick Perry joking that the Lone Star State might take up the ultimate state right and secede from the Union, a similar bill is in committee as the legislative session begins to wind down. Tennessee and Alaska, the Firearms Free Trade Acts, are working their way through the process. Utah may take up the bill next year. The Montana law was drafted by the Montana Shooting Sports Association, which said it will support what it is likely to be a lengthy legal fight in the federal court system to affirm or strike down the law. Plans call for the association to find a pristine individual who will manufacture and sell 20 rifles without applying for a mandatory federal dealer's license. The right to do so would be asserted in a letter to the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. Once a BATF response likely rejecting the claim is received, the association would seek standing in a federal district court to legitimize its claim. Okay? This is where it's going, guys. The federal government cannot be trusted. Many state governments, such as California and Illinois and Hawaii, when it comes to individual rights when it comes to guns, can also not be trusted. The federal government cannot be trusted with your guns. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you. In Congress, the executive and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule. Be sure to take your time today and go to SecondAmendmentMarch.com. We'll see you tomorrow.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will your freedoms? The Two-Way Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.